Welcome to Broads, Books, and Booze. My name is Jamie Bennett. In 2018, I read the inspiring nonfiction book, Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear by Elizabeth Gilbert, for one of my four book clubs. Sorry. Thanks to Gilbert's book, I decided that I want to pursue a dream of writing and producing my very own podcast. I'm a huge fan of podcasts. I've read and heard that women are underrepresented with podcasts. I thought, how could this be? I have loads of women friends who listen to podcasts. It occurred to me that there isn't enough podcasts that are created for content for women. I thought hard about what Gilbert said in her book. What are my passions? I decided to blend my passions of book clubs, booze, and spending quality time with my friends. And that's where Broads, Books, and Booze was born. The aim of this podcast will be to describe a book, which will include spoilers, followed up with a discussion of the book between a guest and myself, all while my guest and I enjoy booze. There may also be suggestions of the booze consumed. Well, we're kicking off the podcast with Big Magic, as been so pivotal in the creation of BB&B. My first guest is Monica. I met Monica in high school French class. We've known each other for a while. Today our booze is Pinot Grigio, our house white. I'm going to say right off the bat that I thought the book was incredibly inspiring. However, I also found it very hokey. Ideas are alive and can travel through people. That sounds a bit nuts. But then I had a lunch with an old friend I hadn't seen in years. She's a big fan of podcasts, and I started to tell her my story about Big Magic. She just finished reading it as well. I thought, okay, maybe this is the universe trying to tell me something. The author, Elizabeth Gilbert, discusses how scientific ideas happen at the same time with different people in geographical areas. For example, Sir Edward Newton discovered calculus at the same time as Gottfried Leibniz independently invented calculus. This meshes with my stance against the great man theory. For those of you who don't know, the great man theory is a 19th century idea according to which history can be largely explained by the impact of great men or heroes. Highly influential individuals who either their personal charisma, intelligence, wisdom, or political skill use their power in a way that they had a decisive historical impact. Most modern historians no longer support this theory. Arguments, if you killed Hitler, the Holocaust and World War II would have never happened, don't hold. It's due to the social and political nature of pre-World War II Germany, someone else would have just stepped into that same role Hitler once filled. However, that's depressing and not inspiring at all. So let's talk about the book. Okay, Monica, welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here.
I'm really glad to have you. What would you describe as the layout of the book?
Well, you talked a little bit about the hokiness of the ideas traveling and being alive, and I think I really liked the book because I totally buy that. I'm all about, you know, the universal energy and collective consciousness, and I do believe that ideas can most certainly travel between people, and I thought it was great. I really liked how she told stories and also gave advice on how to be more creative.
That is awesome. Yeah, Elizabeth Gilbert wrote her book in 6 parts. Courage, enchantment, permission, persistence, trust, and divinity. Do you have any takeaways from those sections of the book?
I do. I think that courage is huge for creativity. I think a lot of people are afraid to put themselves out there and to be judged. Enchantment, you know, magic, yes, Big Magic is all about creativity, and enchantment is, you know, creativity I would see as very childlike, and I see enchantment that way too, like, you know, to really get swept away and carried away with something is super important. Permission, okay, that section I loved a lot, giving yourself permission to do something, because so often we get caught up in all the things that we have to do. Persistent, sticking with it. A lot of times, especially with myself, I have tons of ideas, but not a lot of follow through.
Right.
So I think the persistence is really important. And then, you know, trust in divinity, I think those, you know, can serve us in all areas, not just creativity. I mean, to trust in yourself, to trust in the world around you to support you. I think it's laid out really great.
That is a really awesome summary of all the sections. Thank you, Monica. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about courage again. Courage is a really important part of the creative process. I'm going to quote her from the book. Quote, "This is why we have to be careful of how we handle fear, because I've noticed that when people try to kill off their fear, they often end up inadvertently murdering their creativity in the process," end quote, which I think is completely true. I don't have the courage to do something creative because I fear that I will just fail, so I'm not going to bother to start.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way.
Did you have any bookmarks in that section?
I do. She has a list of fears in this section that people have that stop them from being creative. And there's one really funny one, I think, especially for women. So it starts off, you know, you're afraid you have no talent. You're afraid you'll be rejected. You're afraid somebody will steal your ideas, so it's safer to keep them hidden forever. You're afraid your work isn't politically, emotionally, artistically important enough to change anyone's life. And then along down the list, you're afraid you're too fat. And she's like, I don't know what this has to do with creativity exactly, but experience has taught me that most of us are afraid we're too fat. So let's just put it in there on the anxiety list for good measure. And I can't tell you how many things I haven't started for that very reason. And I think that especially for women in particular, our self-image, how we think people see us, if we feel we're too fat, we feel we're not good enough, it leaks into every aspect of our life.
It's a huge part of our social image of ourselves.
Exactly. And just seeing a list of all these out there that, I mean, there's just, you know, probably 30 of them. It's probably an endless list. And it's a little comforting to know that all these negative voices in your head that tell you not to do something, like, everybody hears those things.
It is very comforting to know I'm not alone mm-hmm. in the struggle of anxiety and fears. I absolutely adored her permission slips.
I did too.
I think I might need to start writing myself permission slips for everything.
Yeah, I think so too. I have a funny story about a permission slip, and it's actually about booze. And it was back in the day when I liked to drink a lot. And I was at a friend's house in the morning. It was about 10 o'clock in the morning. And she says, "Do you want a beer?" And I said, "Is that allowed? Can I do that?" And, you know, because it's 10 in the morning, right? And she says, "Well, do you want one? I'm a grown woman," you know, and it never occurred to me that I could have one because I wanted it. So I think that the permission slips are a great way to trick your subconscious into stopping you from doing things.
Yeah. This is the box that I live in, and I don't want to step out of that box because I think these are the rules. So here's a permission slip for me to do something outside of myself.
Exactly.
I think one of the most important messages of the entire book talked about originality versus authenticity. And she talks about how it's really hard to be original. We, as humans, have been writing things down for thousands of years. Humans have existed much longer than that. There's not a lot of original stories to be told. But if somebody's authentic, that story can be so amazing and so inspiring and so enriching. And it's just something that really touched me. And I took a hold of that and I'm like, yes, I want to be my authentic self. I want to tell my stories.
I think that's a perfect point because it stops a lot of people from writing or making music because they feel like they have nothing new to offer. And authenticity has been a huge synchronicity in my life right now. I'm in another book club, actually. The book is all about authenticity. And I think that part of the success of creating authentically is the fact that other people can relate to what you're creating. And there is that universal understanding between people. Yes, if you write a love story, you know, your take on a love story is going to be way different than my take on a love story, but you still get the essence, the same feeling, and it comes through and can move people without being quote unquote original.
Right. That's completely true. I was thinking earlier today about taking old stories that are known and putting your own spin onto it. And I don't know if you've seen the Facebook test, Which Goddess Am I?
Mm-hmm.
And I clicked on it and I was Hera. And from the TV and movies I've seen growing up, Hera is always, you know, even in books that I've read, she's like, you know, bad because she's always after men. I mean, like, but from like her perspective, from the woman's perspective, like she's just trying to be a good mom and she's trying to take care of her kids and deal with her crap. And I'm like, it would be interesting to write a story from Hera's perspective.
That would be really cool, especially like a modern, you know, a modern day.
Yeah.
Goddess. Isn't she like the goddess of hearth and home or something like that?
Yeah, yeah, and women in childbirth are like, yeah, she's married to Zeus, who will just, you know, like, oh, I'm magically gonna turn into something and knock up women randomly. I'm like, that would really piss me off a lot. It would be hard to be Hera.
Yeah, who can blame her?
I'd be really pissed off all the time too if I had some Florian husband doing whatever he wants.
I especially like the idea of recreating old stories, and I know you've probably seen there's TV shows and books where people are rewriting fairy tales.
Right, right.
With like a modern twist or with, you know, different. And I really find those interesting because, you know, fairy tales especially talk about, you know, lessons and morals and ways to be, but those things change over time. So sometimes the old original stories lose a little bit in the, you know, in the time. And so it does show that it's not original, but yet it is original.
Yeah, applying it to modern day society and morals, mm-hmm. it becomes a slightly different story than what it was, you know, 1,000 years ago.
Right.
Gilbert talks about persistence, and what I wanted to relate here was keeping your day-to-day job. Really reduces anxiety when you're trying to keep your life together and trying to do everything. And she was like, keep your day job, but be persistent with your creativity. Like, as long as you don't have to worry about having a house, having food, and, you know, having your kids taken care of, then you can be creative. That gives you freedom to be creative. I mean, it's difficult to try to find time and make time. Like, you came over here and that was amazing and I'm so excited. But it was a lot of work to put that in there. I go, but if I was trying to rely on my creativity, I think I would be so overwhelmed that I would get nothing done and then I would just be those starving artists.
I will admit, I have come to realize that when something I read or hear irritates me, it's because it's something I really need to think about myself. And this part really irritated me because I want that creative freedom. I don't want to have to worry about a day-to-day job that I hate, that I'm only doing to pay the bills in a system that I don't even want to be caught up in anyways. So that was a little disheartening for me to think, I can be creative, but I still have to keep my day job. Part of the reason I want to be creative is I don't want my day job anymore. But then I really thought about it and thought, no, why is this bothering you so much? Well, because if you really want something, you know, you creative people, you do have to plan a little. You do have to, you can't be constantly in the creative la-la land. You, and if you choose, you know, if you choose to have a family and a house and things like that, like I do. So,
or you have a sponsor, like a really, you know, significant other who's willing to take over all those responsibilities for you so you can do that.
Right.
Most of us are not that lucky.
Right. And most people live in a two-income household and are barely making it anyways. So I really wanted her to lie to me in this section. I really wanted her to say, just go for your dreams and the universe will take care of you. And, you know, she didn't. And I was mad at her for that.
Like, you're crushing my hope here, lady. Yeah,
but she was right. I mean, she is right. And it is easier to be creative if you feel safe. So, you know, definitely not asking your creativity to pay the bills is a very kind thing to do to yourself, I think.
That sort of leads me to your relationship with your creativity. And at first I was, when she talks about having an affair with your creativity, I was sort of like, ooh, that's rather kind of taboo. I don't know if I like that idea. But then I was like, wait a minute, this is just my creativity. If I want to have a fling with my creativity, like, why not? Like, we'll meet in the park at lunchtime and I'll like have a little quick 10-minute time with you, creativity.
I think it's awesome too. And actually I made a little note, you know, about making time for your creativity, and very successful people, they spend a lot of time doing what they love. So in one of her parts, she says, whatever you practice, you will improve at. For instance, if I had spent my 20s playing basketball every single day, or making pastry dough every single day, or studying auto mechanics every single day, I'd probably be pretty good at foul shots and croissants and transmissions by now. And it made me think of another book that we read called Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell. And that book also triggered me in the same way Elizabeth Gilbert did, about how you can't rely on your creativity to pay the bills. And you know, he's like, you know, these people who are so successful, they worked at it. Hours and hours and hours. It's not just a dream that they had and all of a sudden one day they were just graced with this amazing talent.
Right.
Like, it's something that they loved so much that they spent so many hours doing it, that if any of us had spent all those hours doing it, we would be just as good. And, you know, like I said, mystic, I like the foo-foo stuff. I'm like, yeah, I would really much rather that happen the other way.
Can I just be born with this talent and it just sort of like blossom overnight and then whoosh,
it was just meant to be.
Yeah, yay. I'm like, what? I have to work. Oh. Yeah.
And it's not even so much like there's so many things that I would love to spend all that time about, but it's kind of like what you talked about before. You do have to carve out those 10 minutes on your lunch break, or, and if it's important to you, you'll go without sleep or you'll, you know, skip breakfast and to work on those things. And so it's about prioritizing your creativity.
Right. Yeah. She talks about how star-crossed lovers are absolutely amazing at finding time to be with one another. So if you could spend that much time with your creativity, you could really get a lot done.
Yeah, I think that's definitely, definitely true.
So, she also talks in the end of the book about divinity as with a wonderful short story of trickster Balinese priest, which I thought was hilarious, about the Western culture coming in and saying, oh, we don't want these, you know, sacred dances performed at a swimming pool. That's too strange for us. We don't like that. That's sacred. And the Balinese are like, we don't really care where it happens because anywhere is okay. And they're like, no.
What's less sacred about a swimming pool than a temple? And the people are comfortable at the swimming pool and they're having their drinks and
they're having a good time.
And then didn't they make special non-sacred dances for by the swimming pool?
Right. And then those dances became the preferred dances that they then brought back into the temple. So then they were no longer non-sacred dances. They had become sacred dances. So Gilbert was like, this was their whole intent to begin with.
And it just goes to show how she says, you know, she does say earlier in the book, we are adults here. We can hold two opposing truths in our head at the same time. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, it can be true and not true at the same time. And so the dances are sacred dances. They're also not sacred dances. But really, we're all one. Everything is sacred. So as long as they're putting their heart and soul into it and being creative and showing their authentic self in the dance, then I guess that's the important thing.
That is the important thing. And I am a firm believer that we are all intrinsically united through some sort of, you know, mystical, magical, religious connection that every person alive holds.
I feel like that too. I think it's, you know, it's our collective humanity. You know, the way that we can empathize with each other. And it is a connection, and that's what makes creativity so important in all people, is because we get to know ourselves as we get to know other people who create.
Awesome. Thanks, Monica. Before we do our conclusion, did we skip anything that you wanted to talk about?
I don't think so. I mostly just wanted to say that I think that this is just such an important book, and I think creativity is so important, and I think the message that we are all creative beings is the most important message.
Awesome. Thank you, Monica. In her conclusion, she writes, "What we make matters enormously, and it doesn't matter at all," which is the two opposing ideas that she holds in her head, and she talks about this a lot. She says, "We toil alone, and we are accompanied by spirits. We are terrified, and we are brave. Art is a crushing chore and a wonderful privilege. Only when we are all at our most playful can divinity finally get serious with us." Well, I want to say thank you, Monica, and I wanted to thank everyone for joining us today, and I hope to see you next time. My question is, what will you create next? This is Jamie Bennett and Monica with Broads, Books, and Booze. Thank you.